Folks, this is Dr. Brian King, once again here with my partner, Sarah Bollinger. How are you doing, Sarah?
Doing great.
The thing about this this podcast is it started as we would travel. We were a couple of road dogs traveling, doing gigs all over the country, living on the road pretty much. And I'll be honest with you, that is always what I wanted to do. When I became a comedian, you know, other people had these dreams of making it on a TV show or becoming a movie star or whatever, cutting an album, you know, getting a Netflix special. I just wanted to tour. I just wanted to be on the road. And very early on in my career, I was booking a room in San Francisco. That's where I started, of course. You know this. I'm just saying.
I'm laughing because, like, of course you didn't want Netflix. Or of course you didn't.
Oh, no. No. I want those things, but that wasn't my express goal. Uh-huh. Like, I really wanted to just travel, you know? And there was a guy who came through who was already living what I considered to be the dream. He was already out there. He was the most, he was a road dog, already established. He's a half musician, half comedian, and all of it wrapped up into just a big old mass of long hair. And I really thought he was pretty great. He was wonderful. And so we worked a couple times. I got to know him a little bit. And this guy's been all over. And he's been doing it. I don't know how long he was doing it before we met. He's been doing it ever since. He continues to tour all over the country. His name is Phil Johnson. And he also tours with his band called Roadside Attraction. And I'm so glad to have him on the podcast.
I'm here. I'm there. I'm everywhere. Blues, women, and blues. I'm here.
Thank you so much for having me. And yes, it's been quite a long time. Every so often, I have a picture of you and me from easily 10 or 12 years ago that's still sitting in my picture stash that I run across every so often. I don't remember where we took it, but yeah, I have a picture of you and me after some gig that we did together.
It was, it had to be a long time because it's been a while, and ever since I hit the road, I've been doing it now for a while, and Sarah joined me. We haven't crossed paths, you know. In fact, we were even talking about for this particular podcast that maybe we would link up somewhere in the road.
Good idea.
Yeah, but he's going to be in like Tacoma like 2 weeks before I'm going to be there, you know. And it just that's life, you know. When you start out in entertainment, you might meet a bunch of people in your local scene and come up with them, and then once you start getting those gigs, you never see each other, you know. So what have you been up to for the past 10 years?
Nothing. With the exception of those couple years in there, been out on the road, touring, releasing music. I think since I've seen you, I did at least two comedy specials, and just chugging along. It's always release tour. Mm-hmm. And just keep bringing more people into the camp. Team Philagelos, we call it. That's the name of my fan community these days. Philagelos is it's the name of the very first joke book ever discovered, and it means it's ancient Greek for lover of laughs. So we call it Team Philagelos is my fan community, and it's got my name in it. So awesome.
When did you first get started? Because I know you were established when I first came out on the scene, so you beat me to it.
Comedy started in 2004. 2004. And I'd already been playing music in bands professionally for 10 years before that. So I had quite a bit of stage time under my belt already as a musician. So going into comedy was a new version of that as far as anything was concerned. And it was a total accident. I had split up with some old band members, and I was just dumping stuff onto a 4-track that I had, some goofy songs that they'd never wanted to do. And they ended up going on my first album. I had 2 funny songs and 8 serious songs. And of course, everybody gravitated towards the 2 funny songs. And I started playing those in like coffee shop gigs and things like that as a solo artist, which I hadn't done before. And people would be like, oh, I like that Whale Blubber song, or I like that Two Me song. And so I was like, okay, well, I guess my mentor was urging me to kind of lean in that direction and do more solo work away from my band. which I didn't want to do. Everything has been me going, no, 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 I don't want to do that. Okay, I'll do that. and then I got invited to do a comedy music show at the Hyena Theater, which was in San Francisco. Maybe you remember that one back then. It was theater is a big word for a place in an office building with some folding chairs, but they had a comedy music show. Lynn Ruth Miller was the MC of that show. And she saw my act. I had my two or three little comedy songs that I did. And she said, I need a guitar player for my act. Will you come play with me? And I said, yeah, I was kind of open to whatever at that point. And I said, sure, what are we doing? And she said, well, you're going to play Anarchy in the UK by the Sex Pistols while I throw lingerie at the audience. How do you say no to that? I can't say no to that.
Interesting.
Yeah. So she started taking me. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, let me just say, I feel like I should add some context here for people that don't know some of these names. So Lynn Ruth Miller, when I met her, was like a 75-year-old comedian / burlesque performer. Mm-hmm. You know? So we're talking about someone who was already pretty advanced in age, you know, and when she's saying, you know, on stage throwing underwear at people, you know.
Right.
And you know, and just because we mentioned her too, rest in peace. She recently passed away.
For sure.
You know, it's she's definitely someone that'll be missed, you know. But yeah, so you can imagine like this is, you know, great grandma aged person on stage, very thin, very frail, I guess, you know, but like a real strong personality, you know.
Well, you have to be to do that.
Yeah. So I just wanted to put some context because so people know who we're talking about. So
good call. Sorry to interrupt. Good call. No, not at all. Yeah, no. And yeah, she was definitely a magnetic personality. You knew she was in the room wherever she was. And so she started taking me around to some of the Bay Area comedy rooms. And when I play guitar while she throw lingerie, and then she'd go, hey, he's got some stuff. Why don't you put him up to whoever is producing that show? And they're like, yeah, okay, go up, do your thing. And so I just, for like the first year of doing comedy, I was just playing, I had these two or three little songs that I was doing. And then I started to catch all the guitar comic flack, you know, it's crutch. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody wants to follow the guitar comic. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to be part of this community, I should probably learn how to do stand-up. I always enjoyed stand-up. I never thought I'd be doing it. But I was like, okay, well, I've been talking in between songs and kind of cracking jokes, but now I actually need to write an act. And so it just became the process of, you know, write and bomb and go up at, you know, Ron's Farmhouse every Thursday night I could possibly get up, and, you know, all those type of places. And then Lynn Ruth took a bunch of us to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in 2005.
Oh, nice.
So I was playing Fringe after 1 year of doing comedy, which was really weird. And I would love to go back, but it's very complicated and expensive to do that.
It's definitely hard to get over there.
But that's kind of, it all just kind of snowballed and became this thing. And then I realized, oh, if I'm funny, all these other venues are open to me. And there's so many more places to do comedy than there is to do music.
Right.
And there's an accessible audience that's there. And I was just like, oh, wow, I would have never thought to do this, but it's super fun. And I've got an audience that will kind of follow me on whatever weird path I want to take the music or the comedy these days. And they kind of hang with me. And some people like some of it, and some people like other parts of it, and some people like everything I do. And so, yeah, it's been just a weird little almost 20-year journey now of this accidental comedy career.
So speaking of weird, how would you describe your musical stylings? I mean, we said weird, and of course that brings to mind one very weird person in his name. And then of course we've heard like Haywood Live. How do you describe what you do?
Smart and dirty is kind of where I end up, especially with the songs. Every time I get a gig and they're like, it's a clean gig. We want you to do music. I'm like, no, I got a few, but I really like to take a song trope and break it down to its most ridiculous basics, right? Like every love song is really just about sex. And so I will, you know, do a love song, but it's just a grotesque sex song, but sounds super romantic, you know, or something like that. And because I like the, because to me, I think comedy is weird. I think music is weird. Right. I think it's, you know, comedy is like, oh, if I make the right sounds out of my mouth in the right order, then you're going to make a weird sound out of your mouth. And somehow I'm going to get a paycheck for that at the end of the week. And so, I mean, people will pay to hear me yowl and, you know, strum on a glorified cheese slicer. And I just go, okay, that's bizarre to me. And so I always tend to look at whatever my subject is and go, how can I take it down to that most basic level of what's actually happening here? And so that's where a lot of the lyrics come from. But the music is fun because I don't have to be as realistic as I am in the stand-up.
Right.
Stand-up is, you know, very much about me. The songs can be stories and fictions and characters and all sorts of stuff. So that's where that kind of leans into that for the music, whereas the stand-up is more me.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Do you use a lot of observational to influence your music, or do you just go off the rocker absurd sometimes?
Sometimes it's just nutty. I like fusions of weird things. Like I have a song called The Uprising of 1244 that started as just a very short joke, you know, a 15-second song. And it's essentially about this medieval king who was renowned for his fashion sense. And then he starts wearing like basketball shorts and Crocs and, you know, just dressing like a clown, and he's deposed from his throne, and there's a riot, and they, you know, there's a, in the second bridge after the horn section comes, it's like a crazy, like 6.5 minute epic about this revolt against this medieval king with terrible fashion sense. And then they strip him naked and they look at him and they go, oh boy, that was a bad idea. Put your clothes back on. And I managed to get 6.5 minutes of ridiculous epic rock and roll out of that story. Sometimes it's just like, what's a quirky, weird angle on this story that I have in my head? One thing I did was in 2019, 2020, I did a project called the 30-Second Song Project, where every day for a year I put out a new short song that was like 30-second song or so. And from that, I was able to, it was almost like test marketing premises where I could go, oh, people like Kitties and Boobs. They didn't like this other one over here. Maybe I'll turn Kitties and Boobs into a full-length song. Or this song seems like it's got more story to it. I can do more with that. Mm-hmm. Some of them were 15 seconds, setup, punch. There was no more to that song. Right. But I'm still kind of working through those 360 some songs and pulling out gems of, you know, stuff that can be pulled into, made a longer story into a full length song.
Did that garner you more attention? Because I know for us, for example, now Brian has been doing reels, and, you know, he's like, I can't always do a full set or get people's attention, of course, to watch a full set on YouTube. But the reels have really, you know, kicked up. Has that helped you attention wise, fan wise?
It was almost kind of too early for that. Wow. Like that wasn't a thing when I was doing it quite yet. TikTok was kind of brand new, and they really didn't get any traction on TikTok for whatever reason. But they would, Instagram, they did okay. It was before Instagram had reels. So it was, you know, the short form video outside of like Vine or whatever was not really a thing at that time. I hit this weird little window where it wasn't happening. I was like, well, I can't write 8-second songs. That's barely enough to, you know, the Vine was like 8 seconds. I was like, I can't squeeze it that tight. But so I'm probably, once I kind of cycle through this set of songs and cherry pick all the stuff I can get out of it, I'm probably going to do that project again and see how it goes. But yeah, in the meantime, there's doing lots of stand up clips on reels and all those places.
I feel like when you're talking about your 30-second song every day, I in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, I could probably do that if I just recorded myself driving. every day when I drive, I just come up with these stupid lyrics. My daughter thinks I'm crazy, she was told that I was crazy from a very early age. So I don't know why that surprises her.
You know, strangely, that's where a lot of the best ones come from, is when I'm making lunch in my kitchen. I like to sing in my kitchen because it's got really good acoustics. And so I'll just sing stupid lyrics in my kitchen. And oftentimes those become, if it becomes an earworm for me, then I go, oh, okay, it's probably going to become an earworm for somebody else. So Designer Babies came out like that. Kitties and Boobs came up like that. Where it's just like me singing this stupid thing while I'm making a salad for lunch. And I was like, let me try and see what I can do with that.
I was going to ask you about Designer Babies, because I was listening to that recently and just watching it. It's one of the more recent videos that you have posted. Yep. And as you were talking, I was like, you know, I bet you this started as just like this dumb idea, this weird idea that he had, and then he built it out. Because I was kind of wondering, like, where the, you know, until you said that about your project, I was kind of wondering where you would get the idea for these designer babies.
I had recently read an article that turned out to be more speculative than fact, but it was about a company that is specifically working on that technology of being able to use gene editing for designer babies. And at the time, the article was a little more like, hey, we can do this now than it actually is. You know, it's still a ways off, but they're closer than is comfortable. And I thought, I was thinking about what we've done to dogs and how we have, you know, bred dogs into these, you know, malfunctioning pugs that can't breathe. And I was like, there's going to be some jackass out there that goes, I want a baby, but I don't want any of the hard parts. And, you know, and he's going to be like, I want a baby, but this one's no butthole and it doesn't eat anything. And, you know, it's like, we're just going to have these weird, like deformed babies that are just badly designed because some jackass thought it would be a chick magnet at the club.
Yeah.
And so that was the story that I ended up putting behind it. And so that then informs musically where I want that to go. Once I've got the story and I was like, okay, this, the character is a super douchebag. And so I was trying to come up. I'm like, what music goes with that? And I came up with, it was a mixture of kind of club music with a heavy dose of the theme from The Sopranos by Alabama 3, which I love that song. That's such a great song. But it was kind of that just that, you know, swagger kind of groove on it. And I was like, that's perfect. So it was kind of a mix of those two ideas.
Yeah, I could definitely see that in the music. And just as you're talking about designer babies, I was just like, oh, my God, what if we get to a future where there's like a future Paris Hilton type person with a little purse baby? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
As like an accessory, you know, or like in the ghetto, they're selling like big, tough, you know, Rottweiler style babies, you know, or, you know, I want a baby full of muscle. And it's, you know, like, yeah, it's, that's, I think Jack and Train.
It comes pre-printed with the Tupac on his chest.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Cause you know, tattooing is extra money, but if you can grow that, yeah. You know. It's a ridiculous premise. And I liked it. And I was, I was listening to it. I think I shared it with Sarah too when I first pulled it up. I've been seeing you a lot on the internet lately. It's funny because ever since we arranged, it's almost as if the algorithm's paying attention or like, oh, and they just started showing me a bunch of Phil Johnson ads recently. Now I know that's not only algorithms. I know you're promoting stuff. So what are you doing lately?
So I am doing a lot of advertising just to bring new people into the fan community. And basically those ads are out there just to find people that are interested, and they can respond to the ad and I'll send them a free track to listen to, offer to have them join the team. And then I've really, over the last couple of years, really built out a system for keeping in touch with people, making offers to them on a more regular basis so that when I'm not on tour, I'm still able to sell some merch, make some money, you know, all that kind of stuff so that I don't have to be on the road if I don't want to. So I've built out a pretty extensive system in the background now for bringing people into the community, keeping touch with them. You know, there's always more to be done. I spent all day today working on just a live stream setup that I'm changing my weekly live streams into a different type of format. But so with the team, I do most weekly-ish live streams, I have an introductory artist showcase for people coming in where they sort of get my origin story. It's like the Phil 101 show. I show them some of my best stuff. I've got, you know, merchandise packages that are only available, you know, through that. And I've got like an inner circle sort of Patreon that we've developed. I'm doing it not on Patreon, but within my own CRM. I've spent the last few years really building out that system so that when the rain does fall, I've got a rain catcher to catch it all, as my mentor says. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's nice. In fact, as you were mentioning your merch, it reminded me. So he's got a lot of merchandise. He's got all kinds of T-shirts and, you know, albums and stuff like that. And you keep scrolling and scrolling, you get to the bottom, and it's like for like, what was it, like $3,000 or $5,000, something like that. One of the items on his merch page is he'll come to your house and do a show.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
There's two things I thought about that. I was like, hey, that's really kind of funny and cool. I'm sure you probably actually do it. But me, I was like, wow, only $3,000 or however. I was like, that's something. I'm going to get him to do my birthday. You know, do you get a lot of people taking that?
It's, I mean, that's a high ticket offer for a lot of people, but the big fans will, yeah, absolutely say, yeah, let's do this. And they tend to be my best supporters. And it's great for, you know, if I've got an off night, during a road run, you know, we can do something like that. But house shows are super fun. It's usually their friends and family, and it's a tight little crowd of 10 or 15 or 20 people. And I do it in their living room, and I'll do my whole club show for them. And it's a really special experience that they just, they, you know, years later, they're like, hey, remember that time you played at my house? And I'm like, yeah, I do. Yeah.
You're not currently on the road, are you? You're at home in your studio?
Yeah, I'm. Yeah, this is my home studio here. And I'm back on the road. I got a couple weeks off. I'm doing some local things. And then I go to New York middle of next month to do some shows out there. And then I'm flying down to Orlando to have a mastermind with my mentor and a bunch of other musicians. And then I've got shows in New Orleans, Chattanooga, some Pacific Northwest stuff later this year. It's picking up nicely this year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back on the road myself. It's a couple of weeks away still. What are some of the things you love, and what are some of the draws about being out there?
They're almost some of the same things. Like my girlfriend does not like to travel. She does not travel with me. She does not like to travel. We just got back from St. Croix, which was a red eye flight getting there, and our flights were delayed coming back. And she was just like, I need to stay home for a while now. Me, I kind of like, I like that I have to abandon myself to whatever happens. Mm-hmm. I'm on a plane. There's no Wi-Fi. Great. I can't go on the internet. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to watch a Netflix movie I downloaded. I like the long drives. It's almost like it's a reason to avoid all the other stuff that mm-hmm. I don't want to be out hustling for gigs and, you know, whatever. I'm just tired of booking a system. I'm so excited. I like sort of the drudgery. I like getting to a new town and having to find my way around. Mm-hmm. You know, where's the, oh, there's a grocery store a block over from the hotel. Great, I'm going to go buy a bottle of water. It's like these very simple tasks that are such a departure from what I do when I'm at home, which is, you know, get up at 6, exercise, do this. Here's the to-do list, pound away at it, you know, and just all this stuff. And I like that sort of just change of pace of, no, my mission right now is to go buy a jug of water, you know, yeah. and then go do a show tonight. And, oh, the flight's late. Okay, well, great. I'm on my way home anyway. It doesn't really matter, you know. And so I like that, the kind of the drudgery part of it. And then that also is the part that I don't like sometimes. And it really depends on my mood. If I'm out for a couple of weeks, by the time I'm halfway through that, I have two or three days where I'm like, oh, this is driving me insane now. There are days when, and you've probably had this too, there are days where I don't say a word out loud to anybody until I walk into the club that night, yep. You know? And so that part of it can be weird, but I mean, just like you, I really enjoy just the process of traveling. My girlfriend likes to have traveled, but she doesn't like the traveling part. I like the experience of traveling and doing the thing and, you know, just getting out there and the shows are always fun to do, but I like the whole experience of doing it. Sometimes I hate the whole experience of doing it, and it just depends on what day of the week it is.
I love being on the road just like that. It's always an adventure. When Sarah and I first met, she loved it too. She still does.
I still do. Yeah.
And the one reason why we worked is because, rather than, having this relationship that I go home to, she traveled with me and she became, mm-hmm. And we just toured, constantly for a bunch of years, until our kid became school age. And so mm-hmm. that's the main reason why I'm now touring.
Well, she was homeschooled for her first half of kindergarten and was already second grade level, truly, right. By that point. But we just wanted to provide her the option, like, let's try a brick and mortar and see how it goes. And they both have their pros and cons for sure.
Yeah. And we did the right thing. The kid, she loves she loves school. She's thriving in it. But, you know, it's a little different going back to that I'm on the road and she's at home kind of situation.
Yeah, you know? I definitely had some major wanderlust last year. Was definitely the just.
But as you were talking and you're mentioning, like, you know, the things we love about the road, it's like there's an adventure component. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you have an itinerary planned out, like I got this gig, this gig, this gig, it's still an adventure that you never know what's going to happen. I had some experiences not too long ago, which were terrible, but I look back on them and I was like, oh, it was kind of an interesting time, you know. But I'll tell you one, you may appreciate this because, and I think you're probably one of the few people that would appreciate this. If I said this to any regular person, they would probably be like, yeah, it sounds so boring and trivial. But I love it when I get to go to a city that I've never been to before, because that is such a rare experience for me now. You know what I mean? Like I, mm-hmm. In my schedule coming up, I'm going to a place in Washington State, and it's a city in Eastern Washington, and that I'd never heard of, never been to. And I'm like, wow, I'm kind of excited. You know, there's probably nothing there, you know, but it's just kind of the fact that it's new territory, you know, is kind of neat.
I like to ask people when I'm in a new town like that, especially a small town, what can I do here that I can't do anywhere else? Mm-hmm. What can I see here that I can't see anywhere? What can I eat here that I can't eat anywhere else? You know, And they will usually point me towards a good place, or sometimes they'll be like, we're just strip malls and tract housing, man, you know? So I like that. And I like to, sometimes I'd like to find the weirdest little museums. Mm-hmm. I saw a saddle museum in Montana somewhere one time that was just rooms full of saddles with no explanation at all. So I was like, all right, cool. 1880 cowboy town in South Dakota, I think was my favorite one of all time. Have you ever been there?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah.
There's a huge stretch between, what is it, like the eastern side of South Dakota, and then before you get to like Rapid City, where there's just nothing after nothing after nothing. And so you kind of have to stop at those places, you know?
I love Chicago. Chicago is one of my favorite cities of all time. I go there, I eat my weight in Portillo's hot dogs and Italian beef sandwiches. The clubs there are great. The audiences are great. That's one of my favorite cities. I really like Seattle as well. Not as good an eating city, but the audiences mm-hmm. are always fun. Those are like my top two. Mm-hmm. I'm going back to New York for the first time in many years here coming up soon, so I may have something new come out of that. But I generally tend to find New York a little overwhelming after about 2 days. I'm going to Louis Armstrong Museum, so I'm very excited for that.
Cool.
Yeah. I try, especially now because I've been doing it so long, I have to remind myself to go out and see some of these places because my daily to-do, like I never understood comics who are like, I'll be like, what'd you do today? And they're like, just laid in the hotel room and watched TV. And I'm like, first of all, you're in a new city. Why would you do that? Second of all, how do you have time to do that? I don't have time to do that. So, you know, I've got a to-do list a mile long that needs to be done. So I never understood that, but now I have to remind myself to stop working and go out and see some of the city that I'm in, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I really like that kind of stuff. I'm trying to build like I've got a free day in New York coming up. I've got a free day in New Orleans coming up, where I can just kind of explore and, you know, hang out and do the thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's super important to understanding the culture of the place you're at. You can draw new inspiration. I know people who's traveled throughout the entire world and saw none of it, if that makes any sense. Until I was doing a study abroad in Buenos Aires, and I said, hey, how about we stop for 2 days and I'll show you? And he was just like, you know, yeah, you should do that. Like your company pays for you to travel. Just like take an extra day or a half day and actually enjoy where you are.
Like my dad was a traveling salesman for a lot of his career, and he traveled all over the country for various companies and whatever. And it was the same thing where he never really got a chance to see any of it. He'd be like, oh yeah, I'd show up, and they'd be like, hey, you want to see our mall? And he's like, no. Okay, we're going to show you the mall. And he's like, I don't care about your stupid mall, you know? So, yeah.
I make a point to try to find at least one interesting experience in every city I go to. And you know, that's worked out pretty well. There's like three or four cities in the country where I have gone repeatedly. And I have come to the conclusion that there is nothing interesting about those cities. Like, I keep trying. I'm not going to mention them by name because, you know, but... there's just these places, and they're not even the kind of places that most people would put down. You know, like you can find something interesting in most cities. You know, There's a couple of them out there that no, you can't.
If nothing else, I ask where the best donut shop in town is. Yeah. And I will go experience whatever their donuts. And sometimes you find like Colorado Springs has like two really awesome donut shops, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. And you just, I'm always surprised. And then sometimes they'll be like, we got Dunkin' Donuts. I'm like, no, stop.
you've got some projects going on that you want to talk about?
Sure. So I have not put out a single in quite a while because I've been busy. I had to sort of refocus on the stand-up portion of what I was doing, kind of build out my act. I find I have to go back and forth between mm-hmm. the two to really like hone in on one for a while and then back to the other. But I do have a new single coming out April 5th, which is a weird one for me because it is a cover song and it is not funny, which is, yeah, outside of my business model. But it and I'll tell you why I did it. But it is a cover of Barry Manilow's Copacabana, which is not a song that I like. I'm not a Barry Manilow fan, but my friend Kristen Korb did a version of it on her jazz album. She did a cover album with her jazz trio. And I had never really listened to the words before. I didn't know the story. I just heard the bouncy chorus, whatever. And I was listening to it and I really listened to the lyrics for the first time. I was like, oh, this story is super dark. There's a murder and then she drinks herself to death. And I was like, this needs like a dark, heavy arrangement, like a Nick Cave in his murder ballads period type of arrangement. And so I thought that'd be an interesting idea. And it kind of floated around in my head for a long mm-hmm. time. And then I was on a podcast for the Funny Music Project. And I was talking with the guy that runs that. And he said, I got to tell you this weird story. He said, I got in my wife's car the other day. My wife doesn't listen to comedy music. And I get in her car, I'm listening to what she's listening to. And I go, hey, why are you listening to Phil Johnson? And she goes, oh, I'm not. That's Barry Manilow. And I was like, wait a minute. What? I was like, how did you mistake me for Barry Manilow? And he goes, I don't know. I just thought it was you. And so when those two things came together in my head, I was like, I have to do this stupid Barry Manilow song. And so I did it as if it were a collaboration between Nick Cave and Typo Negative. Yeah, Typo Negative with this goth metal band from the 90s. Yeah. And it is super dark, super heavy. It's like a 6.5 minute arrangement, slowed everything down, and it's just super sludgy. My girlfriend heard me listening to one of the test mixes, and she just went, damn, creepy. And I was like, yeah, perfect. Wow. So it really hones in on this story of this murder and that she's drinking herself to death. And it sounds like the backing vocals sound like it's ghosts in an insane asylum. And it's because people go, well, that's not comedy. And I go, that's funny to me to do a Barry Manilow song. That way. And so the response I'm hoping for is, that's fun. Wow. You know, and so far people, it's not out yet, but I've been letting a few of my select fans hear it and get some feedback on it. And they're really digging it. So that's coming out April 5th. And I'm pretty excited to put that one out. And then I'm almost done tracking the single after that, which is called My Personal Hell. And that started as one of those 30 second songs back in that project. And then I did it as part of a concept album, the world's shortest concept album called Do You Believe in Tragic? That is 30 songs in 18 minutes. And there's a story running through all of it. And it's the closing track of that one. And then I was like, I kind of want to hear a punk rock version of that. And I think I can do more with the story. So that's becoming the next single. It's going to be the full length version of My Personal Hell.
So it sounds like you're channeling the dark.
I mean, kind of. Yeah, there's always that kind of element that I like to play around with. And I just go through phases of that. But some of it is, there's another song I'm working on called, It's All About Me, which is, the person who, no matter what sob story you lay on them, they manage to make it about themselves. And so that one's going to be like an Elton John ballad kind of thing. And so, yeah, I play around, I go through these weird little phases of things, and it's just kind of one of it, whatever, catches my ear and catches my interest as a songwriter. And where I go, I've got a cool idea for the music on that, or I see where that story could go where nobody's expecting it to go. It's just, I don't really have a plan necessarily for the music stuff that comes out. There's much more of a plan for the stand-up where I'm putting together a thematic show and everything together, and I do mostly singles for the music side of it, and it's just like, here's a weird thing I did. And everybody goes, all right, cool.
That sounds like a really cool direction, though. I'll look forward to checking that out. Definitely. That sounds really neat. I'm a big fan of genre switching, cover songs, you know, mm-hmm. One of my favorite genres of music is bluegrass covers of heavy metal. You know, it's like, I don't even know if that's really a genre. It's just bluegrass, but it's specifically,
albums now with it is.
Yeah. Like, I don't like bluegrass necessarily by itself, but when it's a heavy metal song that I can recognize, I'm like, I love it, you know?
I love bluegrass music, and so that doubles up for me. You know, when it's Hazy Dixie or somebody like that, I've got a whole album of like Aerosmith covers done in bluegrass style. And I think that's really interesting because a good song can do that. You know, it can be a good song in whatever genre you like to put it in. So that is, if I do a cover, I generally will flip it up and do it like that. You mentioned Weird Al earlier. I don't do parodies as a general mm-hmm. rule because Weird Al is so good at it that there's almost no competing with him. I've written one parody song in my whole career. Mm-hmm. And of course, people love it. And I don't do it very often, but I parodied Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen. Because I read a book about that song called The Holy or the Broken by Alan Light. And it's a fascinating story behind that song. And then at the end of the book, he goes, but I've never heard a good parody. Like, I've heard bad parody, heart to fart kind of parodies. He goes, I've only heard bad parodies. I've never heard a good parody that actually parodies the song itself in the strictest uh-huh. definition of parody. And I was like, well, challenge accepted, Alan Light. And so I wrote it, recorded it, sent it to the author, never heard from him. But I released it as a recording, but it actually parodies this. I used the lyrics of the song to make fun of the song itself, which is really very fun.
Cool. Yeah. Very cool.
But I love that kind of stuff. I love to take a hard left turn on a song where people are just like, what the hell just happened? This was a song. My MO is write a really good song and then ruin it with stupid lyrics.
Bill, where can people find out about you?
PhilJohnsonComedy.com. That's the headquarters for everything. And you can find me on all the socials at Phil Johnson Comedy, except for YouTube, which is at Phil Johnson Funny, because Phil Johnson Comedy was too many letters. Stupid yeah. YouTube. At Phil Johnson Comedy on all the places, including the .com.
Phil, it's great catching up, man. It was wonderful yeah. talking to you. It's been way too long. I hope that someday we do bump into each other on the road. That would be nice. It's always nice. But
you know, if you have to, you can always go for that 3,500.
Yeah, yeah. I just get him to play my house party. That'll be it. And thank you so much for doing the podcast, man. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And those of you watching or listening, however you're consuming this, this has been another episode of On the Road with Dr. Brian. Sarah, thank you so much for hanging out.
Thanks for watching.
Thanks for watching. Bye-bye. I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere. Blues, women, and blues. I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere. I'm an asshole, I'm here.